In 2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Good morning, everybody, or evening, or midnight, however you are, whenever you are listening to this. This is your host, Boomer's Daddy, and this is the DFS Army Daily Dispatch. And joining me is the one, the only, the Major Tilt himself, Chapa Dow.
Major Tilt.
Yeah, it didn't take long for us to tilt tonight.
No, it didn't. You know, I'm coming back though.
But see, here's the difference. Your comeback is because you have chalk. My comeback ain't gonna happen because the chalk went off and
yummy.
When the chalk goes off on short games, I'm dead.
Yummy for the tummy.
Oh,
chalk tastes good. Just picked up that 6.5 on that questionable interference call in the St. Louis Philly game here. Obviously, we're watching this the night before. While we're recording these pods to make up for lost time this morning, I had to deliver mulch for my landscaping job today, and I'm getting too old to do it. 8 yards, lady had 12 yards or whatever delivered. Hey, cards walked it off. Pretty cool watching rip jerseys off each other like a bunch of freaking army guys.
Yeah,
army guys on leave.
Since
right?
I'm in the Cards Network, it doesn't come up on MLB Extra Innings, so I was watching MLB TV or MLB Network to get the updates, and you hit it, and I haven't even seen it yet. So
yeah, well, they're out there dancing in the middle of the infield like they just won the damn pennant, which, to be honest with you, this year might be some of the only celebrating they do unless we're talking wild cards, because those Cubbies, man, they are shot. I like the Cubbies. They're strong from top to bottom.
Blood,
I know.
I know.
But what you see, and that's what everybody else here is saying in St. Louis is, yeah, it's early. It is. Your injury's away. The whole thing can flip upside down.
That's not what I was going to say.
But the one thing I am telling you is the Cubbies are for real. They really are for real.
Yeah, I'm not saying that at all. I was never going to question the talent that is in Chicago right now on both sides. What I was going to say is they're going to go through a slump. They're going to go through a lull, you know, where they can't hit or, you know, something's going to happen. They're not going to win 116 games like the Mariners did back in 2002 or whenever it was. You know, they're not going to do this. Oh, and it was Matt Holliday, Stillwater boy too.
Yep.
You know, they're not the best team in Major League Baseball history. They're going to go through a lull, and what you need to hope for is that you guys are hot when they're not. So you can make up some of this ground that they're going to start creating. They came out of the gates absolutely smoking, and you can't, I mean, the telltelling sign for me is the last 7 games that they've gone into Pittsburgh, they've just absolutely run roughshod over them. They've dominated them, and it's crazy. They are good, so... Well, what we're going to do is we're splitting this up into two. This is going to be part two of the GPP discussion. So I'm going to turn it back over to Chop, let him start grilling me again. And then the second podcast that's going to be released tonight is going to be the game breakdown for Thursday afternoon, evening. It looks like we don't have any day games tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Cardinals, Phillies.
Okay, so we've got one, but that's it. So... It's gonna be kind of nice to not have to worry about all that. The split slate again tomorrow. We had one today, and I played the late slate. Didn't play the early slate, and it didn't turn out so well just because I don't like eating chalk.
Well, I did the same thing, and I generally will from here on out be more focused on the evening games. It gives people more time to research, and it gives. I will definitely do my best for our VIP guys to get as much early coverage as I can, out, because that's only fair if guys are, you know, paying for premium coverage and all that stuff to get their full money's worth. And I totally respect that and I see that. Me personally, for what I like to play, I focus more on main slates, which, you know, the 6, 7 o'clock games and later. And so I bounce back and forth between on, you know, heavy day game slates. It's a small slate for me in the evening. And then, of course, on like a Tuesday night, then it's a pretty heavy slate for me because they're all at, you know, 7 or later. So that's just a heads up for where this is going for the remainder of the season for guys.
Yeah, I understand. You know, we're splitting this right now. You know, for the two of us, I do a lot of the stats and the cheat sheets and the plays and stuff like that, and Chop's going to do a lot of the writing and stuff. We still talk about it all the time. The good thing about it is just understand that we need you guys to be patient with us because we both still do have families. You know, Chop won't be around a lot of Saturdays, and there's a couple Saturdays where I won't be able to, you know, be on top of stats and cheat sheets and stuff, and we'll plan accordingly and see what we can do. But just be patient with us. This is a small crew. We don't have 15 guys running, you know, stats for us. We don't have an algorithm. You know, we do a lot of this stuff by hand, and we think that, you know, it's that sweat and that blood, you know, that allows us to kind of put a little bit more care into it, because we're playing the same plays that we're suggesting you guys to play. So understand, if we have a bad night, you know, you're going to have a bad night.
Yeah,
or sorry,
yeah,
that, if you're having a bad night, normally we're having a bad night.
Yeah,
so
I can only, and we're getting off topic already, but I mean, we have the ultimate respect for everybody's dollar. This is designed to keep things as inexpensive as possible so that we can all have fun on the cheap, but at the same time, there is blood, sweat, and tears and monetary investment that goes into building a website and funding a website and all of that kind of stuff. So that's basically what's going on. We're trying to build to a point where we do have our own tools, where we do have our own statistics and our own custom-made graphs and tools and stuff, but it's just going to take a little bit of time. And you know, we're getting there, and eventually we'll grow, and we'll get to the point
where... Yeah, because on-air talent like me and Chop don't come cheap.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, Chop, let's start growing some and giving these guys some GPP strategy, because we all know that that's the sexy part of DFS, you know, turning a $5 investment into a live final seat or, you know, $20,000 or, you know, whatever it is. Now, understand, it's not always realistic, but those the cash games are what you should be building your money off of. That's what you should be building your bankroll. And the tournaments is, you know, those one or two nights a month or a season or whatever that you just put everything together, you need to be able to capitalize off that. And that's what we're here to kind of help you think through that process for. So go right on ahead, Mr. Chalk.
Well, where we had left off last time, we were kind of talking about a few things. And to kind of segue back into it, some things that most of us chalk eaters don't pay a lot of attention to or give a lot of credence to would be things like narratives, like a guy going home, you know, and inviting his family to the game, or, you know, a pitcher going to avenge a team that he used to face, like Cueto did in Cincinnati the other night, stuff like that. Do you, as a GPP guy, do you typically follow narratives? And if so, which ones do you key in on more than others?
I bobblehead is a big one.
I love bobbleheads.
Bobblehead day is a big one. You know, when pitchers that haven't seen their families in a while, or when their families haven't seen them play, they're pitching for the first time, you know, in front of their families, that's a big one. You know, but I don't just play a guy just because of narrative. You know, he's still gotta be good, in a good spot. He's still gotta be, you know, he's gotta check off my boxes. And it's, you pay attention to it, but it's not a decision, especially in baseball. You know, you've got your dream kind of scenarios. You know, Giancarlo Stanton going to L.A. where he's from. He's got 9 home runs out of that stadium. You know, you've got these certain situations that you do like to pay attention to. Nolan Arenado, Troy Tulowitzki, when they go out back out west because that's where they're from, stuff like that. It does kind of help to pay attention to that a little bit. I like birthday games, especially for hitters, because you'll see that a lot. A guy will get a start because it's his birthday, and you know he takes advantage of it. Especially if it's a platoon player, a guy that his salary is low. You know, you gotta understand the baseball season is 162 games in 180 days, and these managers, they do try to, you know, break up the monotony a little bit. And I think I think of Joe Maddon when I talk about that, because Joe Maddon is the ultimate guy. A big one is Dexter Fowler when he goes to Atlanta. You know, he's from the Georgia area. His family gets to watch him, you know, in person back in their home. He's got hundreds or not hundreds, but he's got a lot of guys there watching him. You know, stuff like that. But as far as like a narrative street par se, revenge games, they don't really do a lot now in free agency because, you know, unless it was the Johnny Cueto thing this past week that we were on, I think that was a big key. You know, Johnny Cueto had spent his whole time there in Cincinnati, and you know, how was he received? He's an emotional guy, and he got lit up, and I think that's important. You know, it to understand that. You know, next time that the Reds come out to San Francisco, and if Cueto is gonna, you know, pitch against him, I'm going to be all over Cueto that day because he's going to be looking for revenge. So revenge games are probably the one I pay least attention to because of free agency. But other than that, it's bobblehead and birthday.
Okay, well, those are the two I hear about the most, bobbleheads and birthdays. But I kind of wondered because, and this is a little bit of a blast from the past, but it just is the first one that popped into my head. I know that in St. Louis, when we had our rivalries with the Reds and Cueto got in that brawl behind the dugout and then the next game, it kind of opened up again because Brandon Phillips came out to lead off the game and tapped Yadi on the pads, and Yadi didn't take kindly to that because of what had happened the day before, even though it was just kind of a thing that Brandon Phillips does, and those intense rivalries. Is there anything to any of those if two teams are really, really going at it where they might get a little more keyed up for those games than others and be more focused and locked in?
Yeah, you're going to want to start to pay attention to this Pirates-Chicago Cubs series as it goes along. The Dodgers and Giants, they're big as far as, you know, their rivalry, Cubs, Cardinals, Reds, Cardinals, when they were both good. Red Sox, Yankees is a big one. Rockies, Giants, is a big one. You know, they literally have a .500 record against each other, and the run differential, I think, is one. In the last like 30 games, so they've got a big series upcoming this weekend. So these interdivisional games, where we start to get a lot of at bats versus pitchers and stuff like that, that's where BVP can really come into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they see each other with the unbalanced schedule, they see each other 19 times a year.
Yeah, I noticed that when you guys have gotten me a little bit more into looking at BVP as part of my habit, whereas it was very, very seldom. Now it's almost a daily thing where I'll just at least check it. And when I see division games going at each other, like if I see a Madison Bumgarner facing the Dodgers, then I'm absolutely going to check the BVP for both pitchers because they do in the same division play each other. And over the past year or two or three, guys like a Posey or somebody like that that's been around for a while have amassed 40, 50 at-bats against that other pitcher.
Hernandez versus Madison Bumgarner.
Sure. Sure. Stuff like that. So there are some narratives you pay a little bit of attention to and others that you obviously don't. It's so shotgunned with some of these questions, so I apologize for not being able to make them flow a little bit better. I had something written down as far as BVP contrarianism. And I know that you like to, Kershaw and Giancarlo Stanton, you like to look at Stanton to roster against Kershaw and whatnot. Are there a few BVP situations that you know off the top of your head? Because I'm getting in the habit now, too, where when I see an ace, a Syndergaard, Arrieta, something like that, I'm checking BVPs against those guys, too. I'm not a GPP guy, but I'm doing it just to see if there isn't something that's just really dominating, because I know nobody in the world will have the guy.
Yeah, I will. Let's see if I can pull it up here for you, because the Giants and Rockies, and if I keep defaulting to the Giants and Rockies, because one of my best friends is a Giants fan here, and I'm a big Rockies fan, but I can sit there and I can look at some of these matchups against the pitchers that have been with the Giants for a while. Todd Helton was a big one when he was with the Rockies. He tore up the Giants. Gerardo Parra is 18 for 60 with a home run off of Matt Cain tomorrow, so I'm going to be looking to rostering him. Uh-huh. But when you go back and you look at it, you've got, let's see here. Not a lot of big ones. Tanaka versus the Orioles tomorrow. I mean, you can look at these. The interdivision games are where I really do it. A big one is the Indians versus Verlander. The Indians have absolutely just crushed Verlander. Even when Verlander was at the peak of his MVP and Cy Young career, they absolutely just killed him. Mm-hmm. You can go to... I like batter versus teams. Ryan Howard versus the Cardinals. He hit another home run again tonight.
He's a Cardinal killer, man. He really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things that, you start to, as you watch baseball, you start to realize, these little things that just kind of go along with the games, the little nuances. These interdivision games, they're chess matches. And they'll generally alternate series between towns. And I don't care. A lot of people will sit there and they'll take Colorado and they'll say, all these numbers, they play half their numbers in Coors Field. Well, yeah, you can say that, but if it's an interdivision game, guess what? There's a good chance that some of these numbers are coming in other ballpark, in another ballpark. Mm-hmm. I think the big one that we've touched on is somebody said that Zach Greinke wasn't worth rostering until they see him right. Well, no, that's wrong, in my opinion, because Greinke has had to face the Rockies twice in Chase Field. Well, there's a stat out there that if you don't know it, you need to take notice to it. Greinke is 31-8 versus the National League West. Four of those eight losses have come at the hands of the Rockies, and two of them have come away from Coors Field. So it's one of those things that you can't, with these Rockies hitters, you can't sit there and say, they play their games at Coors Field, so of course they have good numbers against them, because you could, now, granted, is there a less likelihood of them, going double dong in San Francisco or in, Dodger Stadium? Yes, absolutely there is. It's the ballpark. But you can't say that they're not a good play against a certain pitcher because they're not in Coors Field, because that, in my opinion, that analysis, that blanket analysis is wrong.
Well, being contrarian. It becomes contrarian because nobody else knows those numbers.
Right, and you're doing yourself a disservice. When these teams from hitters' ballparks go to pitchers' parks, you're really doing yourself a disservice if you don't look into how they perform. And you can go to Baseball Reference or Fangraphs, and you can look and see. Baseball Reference has how a guy performs day, night, turf, dome, outside, end in each stadium versus each team over the course of their career. You know, you can look at a bunch of this stuff and take it into account. If a guy is, you know, hitting 300 or 350 with three home runs away from home in a certain stadium against a certain team, yeah, I'm going to roster him because it, to me, that tells me that he likes the hitting environment.
Well, there's something to be said for hitters' backgrounds and whatever else. When we had Pujols here in St. Louis, it was a big thing that they would talk about on TV. He did well in Kansas City, not because he's from Kansas City necessarily, but that might have been part of it. He did really well in Pittsburgh. He owned the Pirates, and it was because there was something kind of with the background out there in center field that just allowed him to see the ball better.
Yeah, he likes the hitter's backdrops, and you can – certain hitters just – they feel comfortable. And
that's all it
baseball,
is.
Baseball is a game of comfort. In order to perform at your best level, you have to be comfortable in what you're doing. And if, you know, a pitcher is not good at a certain stadium, I'll target against that pitcher. That's one of the first things I do each day is I go look at the career numbers at that stadium, if there are any, for your pitcher. And, you know, because, yeah, they have general... It's 60 feet, 6 inches from the rubber to home plate. And they have a certain parameters that these mounds have to be built up to. And it's 90 feet between bases, 120 feet from second to home and from third to first. But everything else is unique per stadium. Even how the mounds are built or how the dirt that's on the infield, they're all unique. And I'm not saying that you need to take that into your daily analysis, but those are reasons why as either a hitter or a pitcher can feel uncomfortable at certain
stages. You hear them all the time, and you see, if you watch enough baseball, you'll see pitchers quite often come out and have the grounds crew come out and fill a divot that the other pitcher's carving in the mound with his release, and they'll, you know, my foot's landing in it 2 inches to the left, and I'm on this, I'm going to break an ankle here, so come and fill this hole. And you can't tell me that won't get into a pitcher's head if he has to deal with that and a hellacious hitter at the plate at the same time. You know, he's like, where's my foot going to land? And it's going to throw him off. And now, again, like you said, we can't take necessarily all of that into account in our daily analysis and our prep work, but it absolutely becomes a factor and increases the variance of the game on a given night. So, a couple of those other questions I would ask you are kind of generic and kind of general, because that, again, I just said variance. That leads into kind of the variance of a contrarian lifestyle. Of course, the chalk is going to go off maybe a little bit more often than being contrarian just by the nature of the chalk and it being the best play on paper and being supported by Vegas and all this kind of stuff and whatever else. I mean, it's over a million samples. It's going to go off more often than the opposite stuff is going to. But that would tell me, in a general sense, that would tell me that the contrarian lifestyle, albeit, you know, that's what you're trying to do, is build a unique lineup that is on your own on the leaderboard, so when the chalk fails, you're alone at the top of the leaderboard. That has to carry an inherent amount of variance with it. More so than riding the chalk lightning. Is that? Would you agree with that? Was I too wordy in explaining that? Where, in other words, variance comes and goes more frequently or more severely with contrarianism?
There are bigger swings, definitely, up until I recently started playing a little bit more cash in bankroll and in, you know, mood and attitude. And like tonight, I did not feel comfortable with any pitcher in cash games, and for good reason. I'm not paying close to $11K for Jose Fernandez when he can't even pitch into the seventh inning. You know, it took a 12-point win bonus to get to 39 tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, for an $11K pitcher, that's not why I'm paying for. I didn't feel comfortable with that. I didn't feel comfortable with Smiley going against the Dodgers because the Dodgers don't strike out enough. He started out great and then was yanked, prematurely in my opinion, but was yanked. You know, I didn't feel comfortable with any of these guys. So I played straight, you know, tournaments tonight And when a chalk stack or a chalk team like the Astros goes off and you fade them, your night's done. And my night was done. You need a lot more help when the chalk goes off.
But you are mentally prepared for that, knowing what you're getting yourself into. You're carrying a larger bankroll, or, in other words, risking a smaller percentage of your bankroll on a given night accordingly.
Yes, I played $5 tonight.
Yeah, because you know what you're likely getting yourself into. Whereas a brand new player who's just now finding, you know, the DFS Army and just now coming to us for some content and to learn the fundamentals of the game, maybe thinking, okay, I'm starting with $100. If I started with $100 as a chalk guy, I would tell you that you can comfortably risk 10% or so of your bankroll in a given night. I'm actually, as variance loaded as baseball typically is as a sport, I'm willing to almost tell you 5 to 10%, because you really need to survive some negative swings, even if you're playing chalk. How much would you tell a guy in a GPP scenario, if he loads $100 onto a site like FanDuel, how much can he play a night, or would you tell him he needs to load more than $100 to be a GPP-only guy?
To be a GPP-only guy, you need to load more than $100.
Okay, that's kind of what
because
I thought.
Because what I'm going to tell you to do is I'm going to tell you to stick to single-entry tournaments, and none of them are going to be below a $5 level. And really, honestly, the ideal scenario would be I need you to play $20 a night, and I'm going to have you put 4 entries into the mini layup, or not layup, whatever the $5 tournament is. It's $115. I'm going to have you put 4 entries into that, 3 to 4 entries into that.
That's exactly what the mini layup was for NBA.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is what's the beautiful thing about this. For guys that you guys hear me talk all the time about my ladder strategy, and it's a cash-based strategy with a little bit of upside in it, and it's designed to reward your lineup the harder it goes, but it's very, very safe to do. I went to Keith in the NBA season as I was starting to learn, just as before we kind of started writing together and working together, and I asked him, I said, Keith, I don't know basketball very well. I don't have but maybe $50, $100, or something like that. I'm the quintessential small bankroll guy on purpose, and that's partly so that I can communicate with those guys and always stay in touch with the guys that are coming to us for help. But the other part of it is I don't know basketball, and I wanted to say, where would you go with $50? And that was the first thing Keith said. He said, I would go put 3 lineups in the mini layup, the $5 mini layup, because it's a 120-man event. It pays, you know, almost 20% instead of 15% or 12% or whatever the numbers exactly broke out. It pays a little better percentage. You've got a better chance at winning a 100-man event than you do a 10,000-man event. And it's a safer way to get some GPP exposure on a smaller bankroll. So I like that you're laying this out to these guys in that fashion, because it's exactly what you told me for NBA.
Yep. I think it keeps you out of what I like to call the donkey tournaments. It keeps you out of the squeeze where you're playing, you know, 650,000 people. Not really that many. You're playing like 76,000 people, I think is what it is now.
Still a lot.
Yeah, it's still a lot. You need to hit basically the nuts in order for you to win. Generally, what you will see is the winning score of these minis is going to maybe get you a middle of the pack cash in these non minis, in these huge tournaments. Now, granted, if you hit the nuts, then your upside is 500 times what you're going to hit. But you, as a smaller bankroll player, you can't count on that. You have to learn to kind of deal with that variance, because there's going to be nights where I've had 2 nights in the last week where all my tournament teams have finished damn near the bottom. But I've also had two nights in the last 2 weeks where, you know, I'm finishing top 5. So when you're sitting there looking at these things, it allows you to start to understand you know, what you kind of need to accomplish in order to start placing higher in tournaments. And I'm not, if you're cashing 15% of your tournaments, I think you're doing well. If you're, what you want to do is, you know, not only cash in your tournaments, you want to give yourself a, put yourself in position to, you know, get a top 5% score where you can start to really get that 20, 30, 40x on your investment, because if you put yourself in the position to get to that point enough times, eventually you're going to take one down. You know, you see these guys that, that take down tournaments, you know, you see the Sahil Saluds, you know, that take down tournaments. That's because they're routinely putting themselves in position to take. It's not because they're better at analyzing stats or anything. Yeah, they might look at things differently or interpret them differently, but they're looking at the same numbers that we are. You know, the numbers aren't telling them some secret that isn't available to us. They're just interpreting them
right,
different or better
right.
than we are.
I tell people all the time, one of my favorite analogies to use is if I am sitting with Jordan Spieth, who's the best putter on the PGA Tour statistically, and here's me, Joe Blow weekend guy, and I'm standing next to him and we both have a 50-foot putt. He's going to make more putts than I am, obviously, because he's better at getting close than I am. So by the very nature of getting close more consistently, he's going to make them more often than I am. But if you tell us we have one putt each, hey, on any given putt, mine can go in and his can lip out. And what you're telling these guys, if I understand correctly, is get good at getting close. You don't have to necessarily win every time, or you just need to get good at getting close. And by the very nature of getting close more often, you're going to win more.
Yes.
And I think that is huge.
I've put myself, and I go back to being what I call a Q whore, a qualifying. If you don't know me by now, I like chasing live finals, not because I think that they're – honestly, I would have a larger bankroll if I didn't chase them, because it's literally dead money. But, you know, when I make them, they're good. It's good for the Army. Me and my wife had a lot of fun down in Miami, and I like the idea of playing 60 people for $100,000 top prize, you know?
Well, yeah, because you're going to beat those 60 people more often than you're going to beat 6,000 of them.
Exactly, you know, and I will put my, and that's one of these things I talk about, you know, get good at making one lineup. I will, when I play cash, I play one cash lineup. I play one cash lineup. I put it in every single cash game. I'll put it in double up, triple ups. You know, I'll put it in quintuple ups, but I put them in small dollar quintuple ups because, you know, those should be treated more like GPPs, than anything else. Just because, you know, if you've got a 100-man quintuple up, then you're talking about, you know, it paying out the top 10. Or 15 or however many it is to get that. So I'll put quintuple ups are smaller dollar, you know, because I view it as lost money. I've bubbled so many queues to New York, to Boston, to Dallas, to, you know, to Hollywood, to Vegas, to, you know, I mean, if you're around during the NFL season, DraftKings ran a $3 millionaire maker and ran a $3 Las Vegas qualifier. So I put, you know, I think it was five teams in each. You know, I wasn't going to go chasing them at that. But you had a better shot of winning the qualifier than you did the millionaire maker. And if you remember, if you were around at that time, I think I was top 100 in the qualifier, and I was top 300 or something in the Millionaire Maker, and I had guys going on that Monday night game. I had a legit shot to win,
mm-hmm.
and everything was going fantastic. I think I got up to, I think, fifth in the qualifier, and I was top 25 in the Millionaire Maker. Just to give you an idea, top fifth in the qualifier, top 25 in the Millionaire Maker, and my account showed the current winnings of just for those two tournaments, I was barely making, I think, $50.
Yep.
They are loaded, top heavy tournaments.
Well, sure they are. You know,
and you and putting yourself in the position to, and it goes back to lineup construction. You need things to obviously break your way. You need the chalk that you're not on to not go off. You need the, I would say, the top three or four highest owned players that aren't on your in your lineup. You need to absolutely just bomb or just do average, and you need your guys to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have that, then you can definitely keep putting yourself in position to win. And make no mistake about it, the bigger the tournament, the harder it is to win.
Number of players wise.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny you say that, because I pulled up some of yesterday's numbers, and looking at some of these various prizes, I can go buy a buy-in, and this should really drive this point home to people. If you look at the $2 squeeze that you were talking about last night, it had 11,500 people in it. It was obviously either
that was the squeeze too.
It was the early only, so it was a smaller slate.
Sense,
but it
yeah.
took a score of 228 to win it. Okay,
yep.
That's a $2 buy-in with 12,000 people in it almost. If you drop down to just a $25 buy-in, well, no, not 25. The $300 buy-in, the monster. That's only 270 players in it. Why? Because they don't all have $300 to spend on a tournament. But if you did that, you're going to take down, you know, a $10,000 first prize instead of $50,000, and you only had to have a score of 183 to do it. So instead of needing 228, you only needed 183. You were in a smaller tournament with a smaller number of guys, and it was a higher buy-in tournament to chase off a bunch of that type of stuff. Now, you want to go a similar tournament, was 184 to win. But it was another 290-person tournament. It was a $1,000 buy-in. But the fact of the matter is, the smaller the number of players, you can get by with a little bit lower score to win. It's
yes.
going to cost you a higher buy-in, which, again, is why Keith is trying to tell you guys, don't play $1, $2, $5 tournaments if you're going GPP only, because you need to get out of that. I don't know, we may call it the donkey sphere or something like that. We're all playing for $1, $2 tournaments, and we're all in that donkey sphere. But if you want to really get out of it and get to where it thins the field down and not as many people are in that tournament, you need to up your buy-in, your entry fee. And then you'll get into those smaller tournaments where you have a much better shot at winning them with a lower score. I'd rather put one $10 entry into a tournament than five $2 entries into a tournament, because I'm going to get by on a lower score to win the thing more often.
Yes, and you're paying up to play less people. One of the big things that you got to understand is the level of competition. Yes, it is better. You know, when you play in the monster, when you play in the home run, and you play against us that, you know, are putting hundreds of dollars out there a night, yes, the competition is better. But with that said, you don't have to hit the nuts in order to compete either.
Right. 228 was the nuts to win the $2 squeeze. 44 points shy of that took down larger grand prizes in other tournaments because the person
You win the squeeze, then you should win every single tournament, basically, that's on the site.
Yep.
In my opinion, if and that's why you see these bigger players and people complain about, you know, Sahil Salud being in the slam or Ganondorf being in the squeeze or the line drive or the smaller buy-in tournaments and stuff like that. You know, well, understand first off, this is how you make your money. So until they, it's not their fault; it's the site's fault. Do they need to be in the $1 and $2? No. Unless I'm putting in, 30, 40 lineups, which I very rarely do, you very rarely see me try to really attack the squeeze. But what I do is, if I'm building five teams, I'm definitely going to throw my teams in there. Because if my teams win that, then I'm winning everywhere else. So I might as well just capitalize off of the team.
Yeah, well, Sahil Sahud is not my problem in the squeeze, personally. I don't view him as my problem. I view the other 12,999 people as my problem, because he's just one of them. Yeah, he's good, and he's going to win it more often than I am, but he's not really what's standing in my way. What's standing in my way is the fact that I chose such a huge tournament to get into in the first place.
Yep. Just looking at like tomorrow's tournaments, for example, okay, or today's. If you go to the single entry, stolen base for the main slate is 2,890. Okay. Now this is a tournament that I have won on multiple occasions. Okay. To beat 2,889 people to finish in first place, you are. Now, granted, nobody's going to really bark about turning $2 into $600, but you are only making $600. Okay. If you go up to the $5, now I only have, this is a single entry, one team, now I only have to beat 1,386 people to make that same $500 off of a $5 investment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. If I go to the $10 single entry, which is called the Ace, which you will find me in a lot, to win $500, I only have to beat 577.
Yeah.
The pickoff, the 25, to now win set or $1,000, I only have to beat 322. In the $50, I only have to beat 112. To get $1,000,
you're buying yourself a better shot at winning the whole damn thing.
I am buying myself better odds.
Yep, the two I'm looking at right now, the squeeze from yesterday, 11,500 people turned $2 into $2,000. Who wouldn't want to do that? We all would, but you've got to get past 11,000 plus people to do it. That $1,000 buy-in tournament. If money grew on trees, you're better off there, because the $1,000, you only got to beat 290 people to turn $1,000 into $50,000. You want to know why these guys at the top are making the amounts of money that they're making? It's because they can afford to get into those tournaments, and they're going to, by nature, win those tournaments more often than a 20,000-person tournament, because they've got less competitors. And their prize pool is huge. Turn $1,000 into $50,000. Who isn't excited about that? So
I mean, but you got to understand, when you're playing, okay, nobody's really going to know any of these guys.
That's a conceptual thing. It's not really a feasible thing.
You're going to play guys like me. You're going to play guys like CSU Ram. You're going to play guys like, there's...
I bet you even at my skill level, playing those guys, I bet you I've got a better shot at beating 290 of them than I do 12,000 Joes.
Sure you do.
You know,
sure do.
So, is CSU
Ram
and
you don't have to be as crazy.
Is CSU Ram going to beat me more often than I'm going to beat him? Sure, but that's not why I'm there. I'm there to take a shot at 290 people instead of 12,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I can be there.
Because even a min cash in the blast tomorrow is 23rd out of 113. Let's see here. That's, I believe that's 20% on the dot. Yeah, just a little bit over 20%. I'm going to triple my investment.
Yep.
I'm going to go, it's 2.5 times. I'm going to go from 50 to 125. And then a top five finish, I'm going to go 200. Top four is 250. Third is 4. Second is 700. And first is 1,000. And I won the blast probably about 10 to 15 times last year.
Here's the tie-in. Since we've beat this horse so hard, we've turned it into glue at this point. The tie-in here is you want to know why Keith can make a living at this and you and I are sitting around wondering why our $2 is not turning into $2,000. It's because Keith is more consistent at winning smaller GPPs that pay more in terms of dollars. He's maybe putting $25 into something and turning it into $150 or $200, but he's doing it so much more often than we're turning $2 into $6 that he can pay his bills with that money. That's the grand concept here. That's what you're grinding up a bankroll for right now, to build to the point that you can press that buy-in up to where you're up there competing with Keith, not because you're not as good or whatever. We don't know any of that yet.
Oh, you're not as good as me. I'm just going to go ahead and say
I'm not
that
saying
right
I
now.
Am. I don't mean to say that.
It's just it's what, especially in baseball, it's something that I've lived baseball, but I just have a knack of knowing when to pick on Chris Sale with the Twins.
Sure.
And when to pick Giancarlo Stanton against Clayton Kershaw. You know, I know these things, but it's because this is what I do. But here's a way to kind of go at it. And this is a different way to look at it rather than, you know, because everybody talks about playing, you know, if I'm playing $100 a night, playing $80 in cash games and $20 in tournaments. Well, why not divide it up into days? And what I mean by that is this. Play Monday through Thursday. Make yourself earn a tournament entry. You know, make yourself earn it. Play cash games. And say you want to play the $50 blast on Friday night. Okay? Say, I need to profit, you know, and I'm going to use, or it, whether it's the $50 blast, $25 pickoff, whatever it might be, you know, because you'll very, very rarely find me in the slam. Like, I just, it's a nice buy-in, it's a nice payout, but unless I satellite into it, you'll very rarely, because in order for me to take that, I have to attack it because it's a multi-entry tournament, and I attack multi-entry tournaments differently than I attack single-entry tournaments. I'm not going to go into a multi-entry tournament with just one, with one entry. I'm not going to throw single bullets because, not that I'm not good, but there's just, the guys that put in 5 entries have an advantage over me, which is why I love single-entry tournaments, and I'll attack multi-entry tournaments at either a lower dollar buy-in or qualifiers. But a way to do it is, say I want to play the $50 blast on Friday. Okay, so I know Monday through Thursday I have to make more than $50 to where I can come out at the end of the week. Earn it. I have to earn my right. And that's going to make you get better at making teams. That's going to make you get better at your resource process. That's going to make you get better at learning all of the little nuances that can go on in baseball. And that's going to make you basically earn it. And then that way, when you do play in these tournaments, you're able to compete on a more consistent basis, mm-hmm. as well. Because now you are earning your way up to that level instead of just throwing it. Like, I love until, and I don't mean to sound bad, but I love until the middle of July, early August, when, and then I love September for baseball because it's people throwing money and they don't understand it. You know, they don't understand that you can pick on Clayton Kershaw in April. You know, you can fade him with confidence. They don't understand that, you know, and I'll get into this, that Matt Harvey right now, the spin rate on his ball sucks balls, so I can attack him. You know, I got Jake Arrieta at 10% less owned than Matt Harvey yesterday, just because Arrieta was going against the freaking Pirates and Harvey was going against the Braves, and Harvey was less
was cheaper.
You know, pay up to be contrarian, and that. And understand where the chalk is, you know. But it's, I think your casual DFS player is extremely lazy, you know. And we try to not promote that.
We're clearly not that in the Army. The guys that come to us are looking for help and looking to build their own lineups. They're clearly not lazy, and I know that's not what you were saying. What you're saying
like,
is the other.
They'll listen to these shows and these podcasts and stuff like that. They'll pay for premium content, but they won't really dive into the stats that back it. Like, for baseball, and I did it a lot for NBA, but for baseball, I put out a stat sheet for hitters, and I put out a stat sheet for pitchers. And this stat sheet for hitters is broken down per position, and for everybody that is taken in at bat on those teams facing that starter that they're slated to face that day. So if it's the Tigers facing Bauer tomorrow, everybody that has played first base for the Tigers will have their stats versus right-handed pitching that year. You know, and you, when you ask a question, you know, player X or player Y, and I tell you neither, but you see that they're both on my cheat sheet. Well, yeah, but understand where I'm coming from. I'm telling you because I don't like either. I like this guy better. You know, we had a situation the other night where the guy asked me, you know, what do you think of my lineup? And I said, why Castro? And he goes, well, okay. Or actually, I got a better one this morning. One of our newest guys goes, I'm thinking about stacking the Astros. And I said, okay, well, tell me why. You know, you don't need validation from me. You've already made your decision. Now I want you to reverse engineer.
Right.
I want you to
defend your position.
Exactly. Because I'm going
That's the only way we can teach you.
Yeah, and Chop knows this just as well. And there was a guy that said, and I loved Drew Smyly tonight. There was a guy that said, I'm going to play Drew Smyly. And I said, okay, tell me why. And he goes, well, he's been pitching really good against a guy or a team that doesn't strike out a lot or that strikes out a lot. And I said, actually, the Dodgers versus left-handed pitching strike out the least on the slate tonight. And he said, oh, okay. Now, did that mean that I didn't like Smyly as a play? No, absolutely not. But I'm going to make you think on the opposite side of it. Okay? And I'll tell you. I will tell you exactly who I'm playing. Okay, and except for in qualifiers, everybody I play is on the cheat sheets. The only way I'll steer from those cheat sheets is if I'm attacking a queue. So.
No, but that makes sense. That's one of the things, and we can probably cut part two here and do part three another time because I want to still get into single entry versus multi-entry, and I want to get into short slate versus large slate. Type stuff, and that's a whole another half hour to 45 minutes on its own. And I think that it's very, very important that we go through a lot of that, because I think that we're getting into a little bit deeper stuff, and I think this is the kind of stuff that people will actually tune into and listen to and learn from. And it's way too much information to sit and type in the Slack channels, because you just can't address it as deep as it needs to be addressed. So
not only that, but it'll get buried, and people can go back and they can listen to this time after time again, and they can and understand this. I say this is all how I view tournaments. Okay. And I look at tournaments a lot like, I'm going to name drop here. I've never talked to him. Actually, I have talked to him personally, but not face to face. I've just talked to him on the phone. Tommy G, he's on, Sirius XM Fantasy Radio with Jeff Manns. And I spent my first year in DFS just absorbing everything that guy could possibly say about tournaments and tournament strategy and game theory. And he's a great, great listen. He's from New York, so he's a little brash and blunt, and you've got to understand that. He's your typical New Yorker. But he's awesome. And when I talk about fading, you know, Jose Fernandez tonight, and the Houston Astros, and hoping they don't go off. Well, does that mean that I don't... there were Houston Astros on my sheet tonight. There were, you know, Jose Fernandez was on my sheet tonight. I still stand by my reasoning on Jose Fernandez. I think that was the right play, which it turned out to be. You know, the fading Houston just didn't work out. And, you know, in GPPs, you've got to understand and realize, as in the mindset like that, it's going to happen. That's going to happen. You are going to get your butt handed to you from time to time.
But that's what. But in a GPP, that's the only way you're gonna really stand apart from the crowd and win is by, that's the whole boom or bust nature. You're going to either boom up the leaderboard or you're going to bust down toward the very, very bottom of it with 65 points.
Yeah, I don't want to finish in the middle. Now, granted, my ultimate goal is if the worst part of my night is I just get my money back, fantastic. But I don't want to finish in the middle. I would rather finish last.
Right.
You know, because at least then I know I was different. Because if I keep making the same decisions constantly, guess what? The chalk's not going to go off every single night. You know, I've had very good nights over the last 2 weeks. I've had very good nights over the last 3 weeks since I started getting into baseball, other than opening day. And guess what? My opening day, I had the ultimate contrarian. I took the Rockies against Greinke, and I won a lot of money. And it pays off from time to time. But you'll go on 2 week stretches where you start to second guess yourself. And that's the biggest thing. That's why I say I would not recommend somebody to be a GPP only, and even I'm not going to be a GPP only anymore, but my bread and butter is tournaments.
Cool.
So that's where I would say is, you know, go back, listen to this, understand that I'm only one guy. There are a lot of different views on tournament playing out there, on different ways to attack tournaments. This is just how I do it, and what I have found to be very successful for me. So, geez, Lester, you're going to throw your glove over to first base? Oh, he did. Oops. So, anyways, we're going to cut this part two of GPP tournament strategy off right here. I think it's part three will probably be on Friday morning. Remember, on the Daily Dispatch, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, we go over strategy content, and Tuesdays and Thursdays we do game breakdowns and stuff like that. So all you've got to do is just keep going back. They are categorized. We're going to cut this off here. We're going to come back. You should be able to just download the game breakdown for tomorrow's slate. right after that. And good luck to everybody. Remember, we are the DFS Army. You do now have your orders, and go out and execute them.
Hoo-ah!